we are going to into health. Every citizen has a right to access health and living supports they need wherever they can. Coober Pedy is the Far North regional hub, which we established, and provides health services to a huge range of people, from locals to tourists, other visitors and miners. SA Health are currently conducting a health planning process, which many members of the community feel won't lead to a long-term benefits for the Far North, but to cost cutting. For example, the 2021 census identified 101 people with a long-term mental health condition in Coober Pedy, yet there are very few services available. Our emergency unit is struggling to cope. The population can swell to 2,500 to 3,500 during the tourist season. How do we get a genuine effort to look at the health needs of local community and the Far North that provides hope and a way forward for the community?
Okay, thanks, Sabrina. Provision of health services is one of the toughest things, I've got to say. Prior to becoming a Member of Parliament, I spent a number of years as chair of a local hospital board and chair of the Eyre Peninsula Hospital Association, back when we had local hospital boards. And right back then, one of the biggest problems was getting doctors into rural areas. And since that time, it has got progressively worse, to the point now we are at the worst I've ever seen it. The community, the Upper Eyre Peninsula, east, northeastern Eyre Peninsula, where I come from, we've got one permanent doctor for over 3,000 people at the moment. It's just terrible. And there's a whole lot of drivers behind, and it's not just doctors, because we run the same thing with nurses and mental health professionals, it must be said. Even where there are jobs, we can't fill them. And there's a whole lot of people that just don't want to live in the country anymore, that prefer their 9-to-5 occupations in the city. They have partners who might have jobs that are incompatible with living in the country. There's a whole raft of reasons. We put in any number of carrots, if you like, of incentives, particularly in the areas of doctors, to lure them into regional areas, and they are just not cutting the mustard, quite frankly. At the moment, just to give you some idea, and I don't want to spend the whole time on doctors, but we are training record numbers of doctors in Australia, more than we need, which is why we sort of stopped importing as many doctors as we used to. The good thing about imported doctors was they used to go where we told them to go, but that was part of the immigration procedure. But Australian doctors, we can't tell them where to go. They can go wherever they like. And unfortunately, they can gravitate to the cities and generate virtually as much trade as they need to. Like Mrs. Jones, I think I'll change your tablets this week. Can you come back next week? I'll check them. And next week when Mrs. Jones comes back, I think you're not looking too bad. I'll send you to my friend down the road, the pathologist, because he's got a payment due on his Lamborghini. And then after that comes back to the doctor again. But at the moment, despite the fact we're training record numbers of doctors, only 15% of them want to become GPs. The other 85% want to become specialists, because that's where the really big gravy is, and the ability to just keep, I think, taking the taxpayer for a complete ride. I think we are poorly served by that system. I think we should be cutting down on the number of specialties available through our university. I'm making these are my opinions, not necessarily the opinions of my party, but I can tell you I'm making them pretty loud. I've long time proposed postcode-specific Medicare provider numbers, and certainly if we're not prepared to go that far, we could have differential funding for Medicare items for doctors that work in the country. Now, I think we have to attack the rest of those shortage of health professionals in the country in the same manner. If you can't get them there, like if this was a Mount Newman, for instance, don't think they haven't got doctors. They mightn't live there. Or don't think they haven't got nurses or mental health practitioners. They just pay them enough so they come there. To be fair, they don't live there. And FIFO doctors, mental health care nurses or anything else are nowhere near as good as those that live on site. But we've got to accept that there is a minimum level of service that communities like Coober Pedy, like Kimber, where I live, deserve. And we have to keep banging away at it. It's hard work. I can tell you, South Australia is probably the worst off of most of the states. in so much as we are the most centralised population in terms of the percentage of people that live in the capital city as to those that live outside in Australia. The least centralised, interestingly enough, is Tasmania, followed by Queensland, which has a lot of large regional centres which are able to deliver higher level services. We think we got a big hospital in Port Augusta or in Whyalla. In reality, they are not of the same kind of level of hospital that you would see in Townsville or Toowoomba. Townsville has a hospital like Lyell McEwen, for instance. That's the kind of grade you're looking at. So we are bedeviled in South Australia by our population distribution, distance between communities, but there is a national imperative here to ensure that essential things like health are delivered on a fair and equitable basis, and we need to do whatever we need to do to fix it.
On this occasion, I would agree with a number of the things that that Rowan has said. And for a long time, I've been an advocate of Medicare provider numbers being based on the population ratios added to the an assessment of the health needs or the socioeconomic status of communities. You find that GPs are concentrated in the more salubrious parts of the metropolitan area, where they do overservice and where the need is less. And where the need is greater, they're far fewer in numbers. It's so tackling the issue of the Medicare provider number is one element, but there's a whole raft of other elements. As Rowan says, there's been a massive collapse in the number of people willing to do that training as GPs. They want to be specialists, and the remuneration package for GPs has to be improved. We have to recognise there's a lot more chronic illness in communities. It's and so there needs to be better funding for long visits to doctors. I'm not sure about having even less specialists, because when it comes to a whole range of procedures, the waiting lists that we now have are very significant. It's and there's been that whole COVID impact, and one of the scary things is that a lot of nurses nationally are indicating they're going to leave the system. They've had enough. They're burnt out. They've worked too many double shifts. So these problems are not going to go away. When it comes to public hospitals, they're underfunded. It's they take up the lion's share of the state budget, but they're underfunded, and the states collectively are pushing for the federal government to go from a 45% commitment to a 50% commitment. That needs to happen. When it comes to attracting primary healthcare providers to remote communities, it's a real challenge. You've got two visiting locums at the moment, and there's not any guarantee that you're going to have even continuity about who is going to visit. Yeah, so when you go and see a doctor, if the records that have been kept aren't all that great, there's all this repetition. People have to go over and over again about what has happened, and the potential for miscommunication and things to go wrong are real. I see that in some of the bigger regional communities as well. I don't have a simple solution to this. I don't think any politician does, and if they did, they're bullshitting. But I do know public hospitals need more funding. There needs to be greater remuneration for GPs, and we should be looking at enhancing the status of that profession. We should be looking at enhancing the availability there's a particular term for it, nurse practitioners that fulfill a role somewhere between a GP and a registered nurse. Yeah, and I think that's going to become increasingly important. And nurses often know far more than some of the GPs that we have these days. I'm only looking for the vote of nurses in the audience, by the way. So, there are a whole raft of issues. Mental health services. I don't believe there's one resident psychiatrist in the whole of regional South Australia. Yeah, not a single one. Psychologists in regional communities are rare. We do have that federal model. Previous government supported, the current federal government support the Headspace model that's aimed at younger people. They've got a few psychologists and other disciplines, but there's clearly something has gone wrong with our health system, and it looks as though things are going to get worse. So there's the importance of, once again, internal training, but also the importance of, and I'm sometimes reluctant to say this because it often ends up cannibalizing the health systems of other countries that need it even more. But individuals choose where they want to live. So we need to ensure that the gates are open once again to get in expertise from overseas, because we're not going to address the lack of expertise with internal training anytime soon in Australia. So we do need that. We do need that overseas expertise with appropriate accreditation processes in place. But it is a complicated issue that's going to require a lot of long-term planning, and don't get us onto the aged care system, which is an absolute train wreck.
Can I just make a couple of comments too? Just wearing another hat, I'm the presiding member of the Far North Health Advisory Council, and you might be wondering what that is, but it's essentially the voice of the consumer, and Trish Turner is here, and Jenny Davidson are here, are both members of that body. Our annual general meeting will be in November. I'm the presiding member. I'm stepping away from that. And Jenny is also. So we are looking to recruit new members. So we certainly encourage you to put up your hand. But our work is to be the voice of the consumer. And in conjunction with Eddie, we called for an independent review of health services in the Far North, particularly Coober Pedy. I think it was last year, it was certainly during the term of the previous government, an independent review, not a review by themselves. We were unsuccessful there, but there is a review of health services going on right now, and hopefully you've seen some of the promotional material around. Get involved. Tell us. There's a survey document out. Tell us what you think. That will go into a future health plan for Coober Pedy and the Far North. Now, look, that doesn't guarantee anything. It's just a plan, but at least it will identify the gaps in services in this neck of the woods. And then again, it's the importance of advocating. Continuing to raise these matters with government, through our local members, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But if we've got a plan, at least we know what we need.
Thank you, Tim. I filled one out of the surveys and I spread the word, because we have to be a bit careful with surveys, because sometimes surveys are there and nothing happens. But I think that survey is a very important one. And us as a population, obviously no one wants to fill in endless surveys, but we have to filter out what's important and what's not. And when the health services actually ask for opinions, we have to give them the opinion, because they're asking for it. What happens afterwards? Obviously, we heard from Eddie and from Rowan, there are lots of different issues. So maybe government can actually go back to the olden days when we had to get people in and we could tell them where they're actually going. Might be something to look into, I don't know. many health supports that regular visit Coober Pedy finds it hard to access premises because of availability, fees or constrictive policies. For example, the optometrist has had to cut their visit 2 days despite having more than enough patients for extra days, but they cannot get a room they needed at TAFE for the hours they needed it. What can government do to provide access to government assets in town, to provide space to providers so that the community can access health supports they need? So it looks like there was just a problem with TAFE accessing, and can government do anything about that?
Yeah, it's one of those common sense things. If someone is empty or has been underused, why not put it to some good use? So I believe government should be able to do something about that. And once again, it comes down to, I think, effective collaboration. And it should be about meeting the needs of the community, not whatever the needs or the perceived needs of an individual bureaucracy operating in its silo might be. So if there are empty places available, or if places can be created, government should be involved in that. On the peninsula, I think Streaky Bay and some other communities have done this. The council actually pay for the practice there. It's costing a lot of money. And my view is that no local community should have to do that. No one in the metropolitan area is expected to do that. Yeah, if there's a cost associated with that, that is one of the practical things either a federal government can do, because GPs are with essentially the federal government, or the state government. It should not come back onto just a select few local communities and smaller communities out there in country areas. So I see that as something, when it comes to providing our facilities, whether the federal government does it, whether the state government do it, whether it's something surplus or something that needs to be created, is something that government can do.
Yeah, not much I can add to that. I can't believe, like 25 minutes ago, we were talking about the fact that TAFE didn't have anything in it. Now apparently they can't fit an optometrist in. For God's sake, somebody's head needs a bit of a kick. Look, and I don't know whether you knew about that before, Eddie, but the place I would have gone first is TAFE's owned by the state government. I would have got on the phone to Eddie and said, this is ridiculous. Get somebody moving down in Adelaide onto it straight away. So similarly, this is what we need. It's all very well to tell us, say, we've got a problem. What I always challenge people with, yeah, but what are we going to do about it? And offer us a solution. Now, when it comes to empty buildings in Coober Pedy, I drive around, I reckon there's more than one or two. It can't be that hard to find premises for people that need to work. They have to be at a standard, but that one with TAFE is just unbelievable, and somebody wants the Riot Act read out to them, I'd say. And I reckon I'll leave it at that.
And just along those lines, can I just tell you a story? Some purple house are moving to... they're establishing premises in Coober Pedy. The site near the roundabout that was rehabilitated recently by the council for them is where they're going. But it was interesting, they wanted to go into the TAFE building and the rent was too much. Yeah, anyway, that's just an example of not working together, I guess.
It just sends a message that, if it's too expensive and you can actually build a new building instead of renting, that sends a very strong message, unfortunately. All right. There are very few services and supports available to new families, including pregnancy support to expectant parents. They often feel isolated and alone. Universal checks don't happen in the first weeks to life, leading to lack of support and disconnection, and there is not financial assistance to provide for young families to access supports elsewhere. What can be done to change this? So we're going into babies and the fact that babies are not born in Coober Pedy, we need the support when they come back.
That first few weeks of life is incredibly important. It's and to be visited by it's usually nurses that do the visiting. It's to check on how the mother and the child is going is a it can set up a lot of really positive things for the future. Once again, it's a case of attracting people to the community, or at least getting a visiting service. So we mentioned the survey. It has been emphasised that it is important to fill in that survey. And this is one of the issues that should be picked up on. It's that early intervention has the, just looking at it from not just an emotional or a short-term well-being point of view, when those services are done well, it actually ends up saving the state and the federal government a fortune. It's because a lot of problems start early in life. So fill in the surveys and identify that as a gap, so that there can be that resources might be able to be made available to attract or retain the necessary expertise, or at the very least have somebody visiting this community and other smaller communities around about, so that you do get what people in the city get, to have that those initial checkups and nurses visiting. So fill in the survey. I know people get cynical. It was Fred Hollows that said many years ago, because they used to do surveys in communities, and he always said, no survey without service. So filling in the survey, because it gives us data as elected politicians to also apply pressure where it's needed to be applied.
Thanks, Eddie. Just on specifics, Sabrina, that'd be child and family health services, which is a SA government organisation, I understand. Have they been asked to provide a service here? Do you know? Yeah, in case you didn't hear that, there used to be a once a week service, once a month, and then it became once every second month. And during COVID, if that nurse wasn't available, there was no service. So that's obviously substandard. The other thing I might suggest on this is the Royal Flying Doctor. Oh, sure.
Okay, so I just got a message from a nurse, and she said this is a real change. So child and family health have just made a change, is that correct?
So it's just made a change in the last 3 months. So if we jump on it now, we may be able to say keep the service as you had it.
But that is not us.
We don't have the power to make them go back to
what
they offered, which is what Rebecca said was here.
Okay, well, we can get onto that, and I can clearly advocate with the...
Or the CEO of Child and Family Health.
Okay, yes, sir. All right, well, I can advocate. So I can just speak direct to the Minister's office about the reduction in service. But it's one of those important things that if we're not aware of issues, especially early on, it becomes harder to address. So
I say the town was not made aware either.
Okay, that's pretty disgraceful. It's and I'll make that point as well. It's but the earlier that you let your local member know, at least is flagged, and then I could go and speak to ministers and advisors and others. So then some scrutiny comes on what has been done, and I think there's just a very basic principle, and it runs through a lot of things, and it's about just because you live in a remote community, there should be some equity when it comes to the provision of basic services, and this is a very basic and important service.
So thank you, Trish, for filling us in on that one. That's sorry And Rebecca, thank you for that. And it just shows if we as a community keep up to date with information, we can actually fill in government as well, and they can poke other people what they need to poke, and eventually, hopefully, we are getting the services we need. And, you know, that's how it works, unfortunately. It's a slow process, but that's why we are here. By the way, I want to thank everyone to be actually here today, because it actually shows that people care in Cooper Pedy, and I'm hoping that we're actually moving forward, and it sends the message that we want to move forward as a community together. Going back to our health questions, just one second. There's virtually no support for children and families who need to access NDIS. Is that right? Okay. In Cooper Pedy, including even basic support to get NDIS plan. Almost every family who needs these supports are forced to leave town, even though they don't want to. How can better supports be provided to town as families need them?
It's a federal issue.
Well, Eddie's quite right. The rollout of the NDIS has, for most Australians, been revolutionary for most people with a disabled child or with an ongoing disability. But there is no doubt we have struggled from day one, and it wasn't a time frame we set. We inherited when we came into government. With the speed of the rollout and finding enough competent practitioners to actually license registered practitioners to deliver the services. And there was a time early on with the NDIS that people could, if they can manage their own budget or their family can manage their own budget, they could employ family members. Unfortunately, we found that a lot of family members were being employed and weren't doing anything. And so not everybody is pure, I suppose, is the answer. And we've actually had to tighten those regulations as we went along, and have made it, people do need that ticket to provide service. And by the time we've got enough trouble finding them in the more populated areas, and we've said this so many times today, how much difficult it gets the further you get away from those bigger centres. Where I live is virtually identical, maybe not quite as bad because we've got the opportunity to hop in a car and maybe drive a couple of hours and find services. 5 hours for you to find those kind of services. We're not in government anymore, but I know Bill Shorten fully understands this. He is talking about reforms with the NDIS. Hopefully that can be caught up. But it is this problem we are facing right across Australia where we simply do not have enough workers with skills in the areas that we need them. Eddie's touched on immigration. We will, the nation will upgrade its level of skilled immigration. But it's not going to actually bridge the gap. And we're going to have to keep on this. We need more people in training. We need more people to actually take on these jobs. One of the things I say, though, because people say, why don't you grab them off the dole queues and make them do the job? I say aged care, disability care, health workers, you actually need people with vocation, with heart. You need people that want to be there. I mean, this is one of the reasons we've had to change the NDIS, is because we had the wrong type of people who were getting their hands on the money and not delivering the service. So it was always going to be difficult keeping up to that time frame, as it has proved. Much has improved, and it's getting better all the time. I'm getting less complaints on a regular basis about the NDIS, but I'm fully aware that the more isolated the area, the less met is the need, if you like. Once again, I don't have a magic wand for that, but I'm very aware of it.
Lucky last question for health. There will be more for others. There are many people in the community that have been here a very long time. They are now in a season of their life where they need extra support. There are very few healthy ageing supports in town, and there is currently no residential aged care facility for non-Aboriginal people available. Many people are relocating to facilities elsewhere and sadly don't survive long because connections of home and community has been taken away. What can be done to ensure that people receive the supports they need to enable them to continue living in the place they call home, and to ensure that they can stay here until then, end if they choose? And I'm not just talking a facility, an aged care facility, but also supportive services for aging people.
Thanks, Sabrina. I don't know if this answer will be much different to the last one, but in aged care, I have not been informed, but I presume Cooper Petey's had the kind of ramp up in delivery of home care packages. Who delivers them in Cooper Petey? What's the name of the... So you think there's still a shortage of home care? So to give you a bit of a potted history on this, and everybody's keen to throw a bit of political mud when it comes around aged care and a few other things, the aged care budget doubled in the time we were in government. And the number of home care packages available went from 60,000 to over 200,000. And yet it still seems, despite that incredible lift in expenditure, that there is still unmet need. So it really just shows you how difficult this space is. Now, the new government has said, oh, we're going to fix up aged care. Well, we'll see how they go, because if it was easy to fix, I think doubling the funding may have gone a long way. The home care packages, of course, are a revelation in many ways, because it actually allows people to stay home for longer. And that's what most of us would prefer to do. But there comes a time when some of us, at least, most of us avoid it, quite frankly. We pop off before we need before we need residential facility. But for those that need residential facility, there is not one in Cooper Petey. I don't know if anyone's ever done a business case, Tim, on what would be the demand and the numbers here. But it's once again, you need to really interest a commercial organisation. Now, given that Port Augusta owned its own aged care facilities, they sold it off to a private operator a few years ago for a dollar. These are millions of dollars worth of facilities, but they sold it off for a dollar because they were losing $1 million a year. Now, the same aged care provider that bought that facility is making good money in the city because basically it doesn't cost as much to get staff and it's not as expensive to run. There is a payment in the system for an equalisation for recognition of how much more difficult it is to run in a regional area. But I did lobby for, and we got an increase in it. I don't think it's enough. I think we need a bigger increase. We've had the same trouble in Whyalla, where a community-owned organisation in the end had to throw in the towel because they could no longer compete. And we've had, luckily there, in this case, Helping Hand come in. And the previous federal government put about $3 million into that transition. And I'm hoping the new federal government is going to help with some provision of a grant for expansion of facilities. I'm quite confident they will. But here, if we really want to have a go at aged care facility, I suspect the population of 1,500, it's really difficult. The ones that exist, like where I come from, we've got an aged care facility, and it was built as a hostel, and it was built in the 70s. And when one of the ladies that moved in there lived for 30 years, and she used to go home and cook for the shearers. So they were expected to be able to look after themselves. Like it was almost like an accommodation with someone that popped in to have a look at you and drop meals off. Now, of course, that facility is at a much higher level of care, and there's 24-hour care there. But it's only a 12-bed facility, but owing to a number of things that happened politically, the state government ended up owning it because it's on hospital grounds. They continue to operate it, but they don't see, and I don't blame them in a way, state governments don't see aged care as their remit. So the chances of them getting to take up a facility like that on a greenfields site, I think, is pretty remote. We've talked about similar on childcare, and I think there's a better argument for that. And the other thing I'll just touch on, Sabrina, you said when people leave and go into residential care, they often don't last long. That is true. I will say people don't last long in a residential care anyhow, on average. And the reason for that is they're staying home much, much longer, and they're in much, much poorer shape when they go into that residential care. So I think the average residency is somewhere in 15 to 18 months. That's the average of people that move into residential care. And that sounds, on its face value, kind of bad. It's not really, it's kind of good, because it means that by the time they got there, they were actually, it's just for the last home run, if you like, and that they've managed to stay in their home and in their communities and with their friends and with their families for much longer. And that's what that quadrupling of home care package is about. I suspect we're going to have to keep going further with it, but it's a really complex area. It consumes a lot of the federal budget, as does the NDIS now. I mean, that's projected to head for, what, $30 billion, I think, by 2025, and $40 billion by the end of the decade. So these are astronomical sums that that governments have to manage and juggle and try and work out where the priorities go. I'm quite happy to talk with anyone in Coober Pedy who thinks there's a case for residential care. I suspect it'll be very difficult to make one, but I'm happy to sit down and talk with them. If you want to do some numbers and come up with some suggestions, by all means. But I'm telling you, this is hard work making it work in an environment like this.
Even though it's a federal responsibility, I've had some involvement when it comes to aged care issues, and it's one of the hardest things that you get as a local member is when a family come in to see you, because somebody that's lived in a community all or most of their lives cannot find a place in that community in a nursing home, and in regional South Australia sometimes move hundreds of kilometres away, and the impact that has, and that happens in yeah, big communities like Waiala. My view is that this is a sector that has been seriously underfunded. Governments can make choices about how they allocate resources, and as somebody on a high income, I want those stage three tax cuts. We've got lots of unmet needs in the communities right across this nation, and aged care is one of those important areas where there's unmet needs. The system is underfunded and seriously underfunded. A lot of the workers are underpaid. Most places do not have staffing ratios anymore. There's been poor workforce planning. Everything's been made worse by COVID, and we have an ageing population. Yeah, so there are a lot of, it's a layered and complex issue. But I think the point that Rowan made about, ultimately the justification for having, say, an additional aged care facility in this community that can service the whole of the community, you need to do, you see if you can get some funding to do that needs analysis to look at whether that can be sustained. But the other important bit is is retaining people in their homes for as long as possible. And I know there's been a rollout, but it's still short of what it needs to be. And often the service provided to the household is short of what it needs to be. So we need to enhance those home care packages and the numbers of those home care packages, so at least you can retain people in the community for as long as possible. But in order to justify a standalone nursing home facility, that's going to require a bit of rigorous thought and some numbers, because it does come down to numbers. When you, even in big communities, nursing homes are seriously challenged. I think that the figure is something like it might be around about 67%. Of nursing homes in regional Australia are operating, are running at a loss. Yeah, so there's it is a profound issue.
Thank you for your honesty, because, it's one thing to bring questions across, and I feel quite, honest answers here today. So we might have to rethink, maybe it's not a facility, but it's the home care packages which we have to look at and go from there. But I also, what stands out to me is the census, the 1,500 people comes up over and over again, and that concerns me. So one, it concerns me because not everyone fills out their census. I know that happens. and that puts a lot of pressure on Coober Pedy, because if we don't fill in the paperwork, the government just sees whatever is in the statistic. So tell all your friends, tell everyone. So since I got involved here with Cooper PD Together, I see more and more that the numbers just don't add up. But it's because we are skipping surveys, we are skipping paperwork. I'm one of them too, of course. But that is what the government needs to actually make a change. Thank you very much for your honesty. And
necessarily fill in the census, because there's enough people that do it, is that Cooper PD's average or median age is significantly higher than the states. Yeah, so there is a need here.
Thank you for that. I'll hand over to Des, and Des is going into roads, airport infrastructure and accessibility.